Last year, there was an unusual song that emerged next to the hottest new albums and multi-platinum artists on iTunes top 50 charts. The song, which costs 99 cents, is titled A-A-A-A-A, Very Good Song. Now, what's strange about this song, other than that title, is that it includes almost 10 full minutes of complete silence. Not a single musical instrument, not a voice, not any sound of any kind can be heard, and people are buying this song. People loving it. Why? Why is a song that has 10 minutes of silence so popular? Well, if you own a model of car that automatically plays music from a Bluetooth-connected mobile phone when first turned on, then you might understand why. And this was all news to me. Cars carrying this feature auto-select the first song alphabetically, whether you want it or not. So A-A-A-A-A, Very Good Song, allows drivers to avoid any unwanted music playing by beginning their drive with up to 10 minutes of complete silence. The five repetitions of the letter A in the song title aim to ensure it gets the first treatment alphabetically, and you get the silence you never realized you wanted so badly. Now, from the moment we get up, we are bombarded with noise. And for the most part, we don't like silence. It can make us uncomfortable. I considered it for quite some time, actually, of coming up to speak this morning and say nothing for 3 minutes, or even 1 minute, or even 20 seconds. It would seem like forever. Because we struggle with silence, right? You're listening to the radio and it suddenly goes silent, you go berserk. Doctor comes back to the room to give you the lab results and says nothing for several minutes. You ask your girlfriend to marry you and she says nothing for 10 minutes. Silence can be unnerving. Silence is powerful. And so I think we can appreciate then the first part of John's vision and Revelation chapter 8. Revelation chapter 8. We continue in our sermon series on In the Shadow of Hope, and we've been working through the book of Revelation. We started with the seven letters to the seven churches, the first three chapters, and then we said, all right, let's keep going. And so we picked it up at chapter 4. But this morning, I invite you to turn with me to Revelation chapter 8. You know, I really love when you just join me and look at the scriptures with me. And so I'm asking you if you have your Bibles or some way to get it on your phone, right? Go to Revelation chapter 8. And as you're turning there, just let me review some things here. You recall that our series began with a scroll, a book that no one could open. This scroll was sealed with seven seals. And the only one worthy to open this book, this scroll, was the Lamb, Jesus Christ, who died and paid the penalty for the sins of the world. The worthy one then began to open the scroll, open the seals, one at a time. We read of four horsemen as the first four seals were open. We came to the sixth seal. Earth-shattering events, you might recall, sent those living in the world to cower in fear. They were trying to escape the presence of God. They're trying to escape the presence of God. The old spiritual comes to mind, oh, sinner man, where you gonna run to? Where you gonna run to? Where you gonna run to? No one can hide from God's presence. You can run, but you cannot hide. And in terror, they cry out, end of chapter 6, I believe it's verse 17, who can stand? Who can stand? And after all these horrific events of chapter 6, we saw last week in chapter 7 that God gave John an interlude. And as we looked at last week, God gave John this time out from all the judgments to a vision backstage of the redeemed who will stand the wrath of God. See, interludes are a necessary part of life. We need those timeouts in life to regain a heavenly perspective. The first century Christians facing persecution at the time this was written, they were wondering, how in the world do we stand in our faith in the middle of all that's going on, all the persecution and all the crumblings around us in our city? Well, God gave them an interlude. Victims become victors. Calamities switch to celebration as God allows us to see a little of his plan for the future. And as we understand, this is important, as we understand God's plan for the future, that we can appreciate God's work in the present. It's as we understand God's plan for the future that we can appreciate God's work in the present. Now, up to this point, as we have worked through chapters 4 through 7, you might have noticed there's a lot of noise. There's a lot of noise in those chapters. I mean, we have choirs singing. We have multitudes shouting praise. There's sounds of thunder and flashes of lightning. And angels and martyrs, whenever they spoke in loud voices, it says. There's chaos. There's cosmic storms. I mean, it was anything but quiet. Then Christ opens the seventh seal. We come to our first heading this morning, hush in heaven. Hush in heaven. All right, I hope you're there. Revelation chapter 8, let's look at verse 1. It says, when he, Christ, opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven for about a half an hour. Now, with all this noise to this point, this silence is unexpected. I mean, can you imagine a half hour of silence? Some of you are saying, I'd love to have a half hour of silence. I mean, what if I stood here for the next 30 minutes and said nothing? I mean, there are people maybe around the pulpit saying nothing when they speak. I'm not talking about that. But there was nothing. It was complete silence. I came up here for the next 30 minutes, and I said absolutely nothing. There was complete silence. I mean, you'd start to become kind of fidgety. You might turn to the person next to you and whisper, is the pastor okay? Shouldn't somebody do something? Now, perhaps some of you might even get up and leave. I can guarantee you no one left the room during this half hour of silence. Okay, what's with this silence here? Revelation chapter 8, verse 1. Well, we know the silence happened when the seventh seal was opened. So what do we know of the seventh seal? Well, when the seventh seal is opened, there's silence. Now look at verse 2. John says, I saw the seven angels who stand before God, and to them were given seven trumpets. Now, the seventh seal puts in motion the next set of judgments. When the seventh seal is opened, it means the next set of sevens is about to begin. Now, I want to remind you again of how Revelation is organized. In Revelation, you have three sets of sevens. You have seven seals, you have seven trumpets, you have seven bowls. And I believe, and you're free to disagree with me on this, but I believe that these three sets of sevens are arranged in cycles more than they are arranged around chronology. The arrangement, in my mind, seems cyclical, not chronological. So what you have then with these three sets of judgments, these seals, these trumpets, these bowls, are cycles that reinforce one another. We see them as kind of sequences, but they cover all the same time frame, the seven-year tribulation. Now, each set of judgments, I look at it this way, takes us on a tour through the judgments. They take us through, and they build on each other, and in some cases, they build in intensity. They don't just say the same thing over and over. They add more information to our whole picture. Now, someone has kind of likened it to an old telescope, a spyglass. It was a little old, so you have to go backwards on that one, that old telescope. Well, when you have that old telescope, as you open it, you see different parts, right? But when you close it, it's all one. But as you open it up, each part slides into the previous parts. That's kind of what's going on here. We get a telescopic view. So as each set adds detail to the big picture, we get a comprehensive view of the coming of God's kingdom in this world. Now, before John can see more of the events of the seven-year tribulation period, he encounters 30 minutes of silence. Now, heaven has no time, but John does. 30 minutes of complete silence. Bernard Levin a journalist of the previous generation. He describes a time when at the end of a recital of Schubert's songs by one of the finest singers of the day, when it was all over, the audience sat in complete silence. The spell of the music had been so powerful that nobody dared to disturb it with anything as mundane as clapping. Then after a few minutes, the audience, still in silence, got up slowly and left the concert hall. That was the case in movie theaters at the time of the showing of The Passion. The end of that movie, people sat in silence, and then still in silence, they got up and left the theaters. It was that powerful. See, there are certain moments that are so rare that it has an overwhelming effect on us. This half hour of silence that we see here was more than just the absence of noise. It wasn't awkward silence. It wasn't an unwelcomed piece of boredom. There is a profound hush in the room. It's as if everyone is holding their breath for what is to come. The hush in heaven should tell us that something big, something incredible is about to happen. Or as one writer expressed it, he said, "The silence is the silence of awesome expectation." The silence is the silence of awesome expectation. And you know what? We need more silence built into our routines, don't we? I mean, I got to get out of the habit as soon as I get in the car, turn on the radio. We need to have silence because silence builds into our lives when we have those moments. It builds into our lives anticipation and an expectation of what God is going to do next. We don't take time for that. We just move along, right? We do. So the hush of heaven here prepares us for the next cycle of sevens. And notice that seven angels were given seven trumpets. Now, don't think musical instruments here when you hear trumpets. Trumpets were used in other ways. They were used in battles, for sure. They were used in battles. And I can only imagine that the Jewish Christians in John's day, when they heard the word trumpets, they might have thought back to that decisive time in their history when the blasts of trumpets leveled the walls of Jericho. They might have gone back there. But commonly, trumpets were used to sound an alarm. They were blown for warning of coming danger, and in my opinion, that's the point here. Be warned, sound the alarm, judgment is coming. But before these trumpets sound the alarm, God provides some encouragement to anyone who wonders about God's timetable. The hush in heaven is followed by an angel carrying a golden censer. We have our second heading this morning, a censer that's thrown to earth. A censer that's thrown to earth. Before the trumpets can sound, we are invited in to see how heaven and earth come together in a spectacular way. Look at verse 3. It says another angel, and that's not Christ, that's another angel of the same kind. Who had a golden censer, came and stood at the altar. He was given much incense to offer with the prayers of all the saints on the golden altar before the throne. The smoke of the incense together with the prayers of the saints went up before God from the angel's hand. Look at verse 5. Then the angel took the censer, filled it with fire from the altar, and hurled it, threw it on the earth. And there came peals of thunder, we've seen this before, and rumblings and flashes of lightning and an earthquake. Well, what's going on here? I think this is really cool. Because we are brought behind the scenes to see how the prayers of God's people are related to the work of God's purposes. Now I want to give you some background to the temple or the tabernacle in the Old Testament. I think it would be helpful here. In the temple, you have the Holy of Holies, the holy place. And it was said there in that Holy of Holies, that holy place, was where God's glory dwelt. It was where the presence of God lived in a unique way. Well, the altar of incense was the nearest thing to the Holy of Holies. And in Old Testament times, the priest would take some incense and he'd place it on the hot, fiery coals which are on the altar. And of course, the incense would ignite and burn, and smoke would fill the room just inside the curtain of the holy place where the presence of God was located. Now, in John's vision, it says here that the incense symbolized the prayers of all the saints. And it says that the smoke of the incense, along with the prayers of the saints, rises to God's presence. This incense of the smoke and of the prayers of the saints rises to God's presence. Now let's linger here for a moment. God enjoys the scent of these prayers. God is pleased with the prayers of his people. Is that how you view your prayers to God? Or do you feel more like you're annoying God when you come to him in prayer? Or do you even wonder if your prayers ever go beyond the ceiling and ever really reach God? Well, there's some encouragement to be found in Revelation 8 that speaks to our prayer life, because these verses, I believe, are a powerful testimony to the power of prayer. Let me explain what I mean. In terms of flow, verses 3 through 5 of chapter 8 are not necessary. You don't, in terms of going on to what's coming next, you don't need verses 3 through 5. You could read verse 2, go right into verse 6, and not miss a thing regarding the trumpet judgments. Let me show you. I'm going to read verse 2, and then I'm going to skip verses 3 through 5 and go right into verse 6. I'm going to read verse 2, skip the section that we were just looking at, and then go to verse 6. You'll see how it just flows right in. Verse 2 says, "And I saw the seven angels who stand before God, and to them were given seven trumpets. Then the seven angels who had the seven trumpets prepared to sound them," verse 6 tells us. See, verses 3 through 5 are not necessary to the narrative. Why are they here? Because they're extremely necessary for understanding of prayer. God wanted John and us to see how the prayers of God's people are related to the work of God's purposes. Go back with me to Revelation chapter 6. Go back to chapter 6. Keep your finger here in chapter 8. We looked at this a couple of weeks ago, chapter 6, but I want to now tie it into the trumpet judgments of chapter 8. Revelation 6. We're going to pick it up in verse 9. It says, "When he," Christ, "opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of those who had been slain because of the word of God and the testimony they had maintained." Now, these are the people who have come to faith during the tribulation, and it cost them their lives to profess the name of Christ. Okay? So verse 10, these same people, these martyrs, they call out in a loud voice, "How long, sovereign Lord, holy and true, until you judge the inhabitants of the earth," and that phrase "inhabitants of the earth" means the ungodly, the unbelievers. "How long, sovereign Lord, until you judge the ungodly, the unbelievers, and avenge our blood?" And God's answer to them was, "Wait a little while longer." But what are they praying? What are they asking God to do? They want God to judge the injustice. Three boys were arguing in the schoolyard, and when there was no resolution in sight, one of the boys said to the other two, "You know what? I'm going to tell the teacher on you." Well, the second boy jumped in and said, "Oh, yeah? Well, I'm going to tell my dad on you." The third boy would not be outmatched, so he yelled, "Oh, yeah? Well, I'm going to tell God on you." You can't get any better than that. Telling God. That's what these martyrs are doing. They're telling God on their avengers, on the ones who are after them, the persecutors, talking to God. That is a good place to go with our hurt and the injustices in the world. Tell God. Go to him with it. These martyrs who long for the coming of justice, they pray to God to pour out his vengeance on the ungodly. These kinds of prayers, by the way, are what theologians call imprecatory prayers. I know it's a big word, but imprecatory prayers. It's asking God, and you see them a lot in the book of Psalms, but you see them other places, but it's asking God to judge evil. It's asking God in these kind of prayers to pour out his vengeance on evildoers and the injustice in the world. Now, some people say we shouldn't pray in this way. I disagree. It is appropriate for Christians to pray for justice in this world. It is not at odds with forgiveness. It's not. Because forgiveness means we let people off our hook, but it doesn't mean they are off God's hook or society's hook, for that matter, for there may be consequences. So it is appropriate, and I said this a couple of weeks ago, I repeat it now. It is appropriate to pray for God's revenge as long as we realize we have no right to carry it out. It is appropriate to pray for God's revenge as long as we realize we have no right to carry it out. It's appropriate for where we are releasing to God our right to vengeance. We are turning evil and evildoers over to the God who is just. It is releasing all our bitterness that can come in and give it to God, for he will do what is right in his time. It's releasing all that bitterness. Any bitterness in your heart this morning? It will destroy you. It will destroy you. Get rid of it. Get rid of the bitterness. Turn that bitterness or that person over to the Lord. Maybe you need to do that fresh here this morning. Give it over to God. Trust that God will deal with that person justly. And so the martyrs cry out, "How long, O Lord, how long? When will you avenge our blood?" God said, "Wait, wait a little longer." But these prayers are an incense to God. And then in chapter 8, we find the angel taking that censer filled with the prayers that asking for God to avenge their blood, and the angel throws those prayers to the earth. Then, I love this, then come the trumpet judgments. Do you see it? The judgments in Revelation 8 come in response to the prayers of God's people. God uses the prayers of his people to accomplish his purpose, and I don't always understand how he does that, but he does it. And so our own hearts cry out, "How long, O Lord, how long? How can evil keep on prevailing? Why does injustice seem to win? Why do those who do wrong seem to get ahead and prosper?" We ask things like, "God, does a life of faith, does it even work?" Let Revelation chapter 8 bless you today. There is hope for justice. We live in the shadow of this hope. We don't always see justice winning right now, but there is a spiritual conundrum that we have in our lives of evil prospering while doing good doesn't seem to always pay. You know, there was a worship leader in the Old Testament who was deeply troubled over apparent injustices. His name was Asaph. If you haven't read Psalm 73 in a while, go to Psalm 73, especially if you're trying to wrestle through some injustices, because he was struggling with this. Asaph, in Psalm 73, he angrily laments people not only getting away with evil, but worse than that, they seem to be doing quite well. They didn't have struggles. They got ahead. It seemed that evil was rewarded and doing what is right was all for nothing. I mean, how frustrating is it to you when people get away with something that they did wrong? Someone flies by you in his car. Where's a police officer when you need him? Right? Yeah. I mean, we get frustrated with that. Recently, someone did that to me, and I went, "I gotta get a picture of his license plate. I gotta send it in." Really? I'm not even supposed to be using my phone while I'm driving. I want grace, though. Justice for him. I mean, so sweet, is it not, when that car that flies by, you see him pulled over down the street, you go, "Yes! Come on, you do." One evening, a doctor was driving too fast. and he made the mistake of passing a police car. The police car sped up, and he pulled up right behind him, and thinking fast, the doctor reached into his medical bag, and he took out his stethoscope. He then waved his stethoscope out his window at the police car, and the police officer nodded, slowed down, and let the doctor speed away. Huh, he got away with it. A few days later, the same doctor was driving down the same road, and again he passed the same police car. He's not very bright. This time, the police car came up beside him, and the policeman rolled down his window, and he was dangling a set of handcuffs. The doctor pulled over. Justice was served. Listen, God will bring about justice. As the prayers go up, God's justice comes down. Keep praying about injustices. Turn it over to God. Pray and do not give up. Pray in confidence. Pray in hope that they all count, that they're not in vain, that there is a day. There is a day when God will bring about his kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. There is a day. That's what these trumpets are all about. And so the prayers of God's people reach God, and they're pleasing to him. And the sounding of the trumpets is a case in point that God answers the prayers of his people. And though we may not always understand how, the prayers of God's people are related to the work of God's purposes. And so we have a hush in heaven. There's a censer thrown down to earth. Our third heading is global warning. Global warning. And verses 6 through 12, the first four trumpets sound their warning. They are judgments on the earth aimed at the creation. Look at verse 7. Revelation 8. First angel sounded his trumpet. There came hail and fire mixed with blood, and it was hurled down upon the earth. A third of the earth was burned up. A third of the trees were burned up, and all the green grass was burned up. You see, there's a devastation in the first trumpet that comes to the land. Well, the second trumpet targets the sea. It tells us in verse 8 that a huge mountain, I don't know how this is going to happen, a huge mountain all ablaze was thrown into the sea, and a third of the sea turned into blood, a third of living creatures in the sea died, and a third of the ships were destroyed. Now, you might have noticed that this language here is very similar to the time in Israel's history when God sent plagues on the Egyptians. And I believe the likeness is intentional. It should be no surprise to us when we get to Revelation chapter 15 that we will find the people singing the song of Moses and the song of the Lamb. And so first trumpet of hail and fire resembles the seventh plague on Egypt. The second trumpet has a likeness to the plague of the blood sent on the Egyptians. The poisoned water of the third trumpet judgment reminds us of Egypt. And then the fourth trumpet of judgment of darkness echoes the ninth Egyptian plague. Now, God, in each of the plagues back in the Old Testament, was challenging the gods of Egypt. The plagues were meant to prove that God is greater than their gods. The same message is seen in these four trumpet judgments in the end times. God is greater than Mother Earth. And one day he'll prove to the world that he's greater than the world. Now, a picture of all creation in those four trumpets, from the land to the sea, to the rivers, to the sky, are systematically facing devastation. These first four trumpets, like the four horsemen we saw in the first four seals, follow one another in rapid succession. But unlike the plague sent to Egypt, these judgments here are not just for one country, they are global. They are a divine warning to all mankind. These four trumpets are a global warning. Now, I suppose we could spend some time, and that's fine if you want to, but I suppose we could spend some time making guesses as to how these judgments happen. What does it mean that this huge mountain was thrown into the sea? How do these catastrophic fires occur? How does this massive pollution on the sea and the freshwater, how's that going to take place? How will these cosmic changes cause natural light to disappear for a third of the world? I don't know. I'm not sure. Something is happening here, but you don't know what it is, Bob Dylan wrote. It is. We don't know. We don't know. But we know it happens. Now, with these events in Revelation, we should not concern ourselves with the how, but with the why and the who. As I've already said, the point of Revelation is not to move us to producing charts where we can plug in all that's happening into the world into some timelines. It was not to promote speculation about the future. It was written to bless us. Revelation chapter 1, verse 3. So I want to leave you with some timeless principles. Timeless principles. First of all, principle number one, the purpose of creation is to point to God. The purpose of creation is to point to God. See, God is the maker of creation. The earth is his doing. He made it, and he said it was good. So then why all this destruction on this earth that God made? Because that's what we see in these first four trumpets. Well, I believe it's that. Here's the why. People have worshipped the created things rather than the creator. Many worship the idol of Mother Earth. Now, don't misunderstand me. We should be environmentally conscious. We are to be caretakers of this world that God has created. There's nothing wrong with enjoying God's beautiful creation. Matter of fact, in 1 Timothy chapter 5, it says that God has richly provided us with everything for our enjoyment. So enjoyment is fine. Taking care of this earth is required as his stewards. But listen, don't put your hope in created things. It's all going to be gone. Don't go beyond enjoyment to worshiping earth itself, for that is idolatry. In Romans chapter 1, it speaks of God's wrath presently on those who worship and serve the created things rather than the creator. Carl Sagan said, "The cosmos is all that is or was or ever will be." Whose is God? Any gods in your life? Are our affections for the created things more than our affections for the Creator God? I mean, when does it cross that line from enjoying his creation to serving it, worshiping it, making all this an idol? When do we cross that line? Now, you have to work that out for yourself. But all this is supposed to be pointing to him. That's our first principle. Second timeless principle is this: future devastation sounds a warning to live for another world. Future devastation of this world sounds a warning to live for another world. You see, heaven is not irrelevant. And yet we live at times as though this is all there is. The sounding of these four trumpets gets our attention to live for another world. And so when stuff happens in your life, I mean, maybe tragedy strikes or some disaster takes what is valuable to us or some material thing disappoints us, it's all meant to warn us that laying up our treasures on earth will leave us unsatisfied, frustrated, and restless. It's meant to push us forward to lay up our treasures beyond this world. So is there any suffering or disaster that God might be using right now in your life to get your attention? Any prop you've kind of been leaning on that he's removed? If someone observed your decisions, they watched you this past week, and they observed your decisions and your priorities and your spending and your behavior this past week, would they conclude that you are living for this world or you're living for the next? If they watched me, what would they say at the end? Oh, yeah, Pastor Brian, he's definitely living for the other world. I hope they say that, but what about my priorities and my decisions and my behaviors? See, future devastation sounds a warning to live for another world. Let it push you there. Third principle, I need to get to this. Third principle, coming back full circle here. Justice is coming. Justice is coming. That's a sober warning and a reality to those who have despised his grace and live for this world. Justice is coming. They ought to be just knocking at their knees. But it also should infuse hope into our souls. See, we can easily lose heart, can't we, at the slowness of justice? But God will not gloss over sin. The seriousness of sin will not be ignored by God. His good earth that he created has been tainted by evil. And we can trust in God to be just. And he might be saying to us as we're not seeing justice played out in our life, he might be saying to us, wait a little longer. But his delay does not mean that he's unconcerned or unaware. The delay really likely is because God in his mercy longs for people to come to him in repentance. His delay, I know, it's hard to accept and it's even harder to live through. But justice is coming. And so as you cry out to him and wonder of how long, O Lord, how long, let it drive you to a deeper trust in the person of Jesus Christ. As we live in the hope of the coming justice, remember, God hears our prayers. Let the blast of each of the trumpets encourage your heart that God is always right on time. Always. And one day, the last cry for his kingdom to come will set it all in motion and it will happen. Keep longing for that day, church. Keep longing for that day. Justice is coming. President Mobutu reigned as the dictator and president of the Democratic Republic of the Congo from 1965 to 1997. But after global political changes, Mobutu was forced out of power. And the country collapsed, and it descended into conflict and chaos. I mean, it was just nuts. British pastor Mark Maynell tells the story of his good friend Emma, who witnessed many atrocities committed against his friends and his family members during this time of chaos and conflict. That Emma and his wife and three daughters fled east on foot. And weeks later, they arrived in Uganda as refugees, and they had absolutely nothing, nothing at all. Well, after a few months of just miserable existence, he walked past a local seminary, and he sensed that the Lord was calling him into ministry. The family had been living in one room without water or electricity and enough to pay for one meal every 2 days. Pastor Mark Maynell said that one evening he sat down with Emma in a tiny library at the seminary and they started talking. And as Emma opened his heart and shared the story of the violence and injustice he had witnessed, he started to openly weep, despite the fact that African men never cry in public. Then Emma said these sobering words. He said, "You know, Pastor Mark, I could never believe the gospel if it were not for the judgment of God, because I will never get justice in this world. But I couldn't cope if I was never going to see justice done." Pastor Mark Maynell comments, he says this, he says, "We in the West often recoil from God's justice for a very simple reason. We've hardly had to suffer injustice, comparably to other parts of the world." He goes on, "But most people around the globe recognize that God's justice is praiseworthy and great. Of course, his mercy and redemption are even greater, but we need his perfect justice as well." Justice is coming. We live in the shadow of that hope. We live in the shadow of that hope.